Welcome to the Smart Investing Podcast, brought to you by Money and Me, an investor education and awareness initiative by PGIM India Mutual Fund.
Hello to all of you lovely investors listening into PGIM India Mutual Fund presents Smart Investing. I'm Mahalia, keeping you company just for a short while, as always, at the start of this episode to set the context of what our experts Ravi and Lisa are going to be talking about today. Now, when it comes to investing, there's so many different styles of doing it. There's so many different strategies that you can employ. But you know, one trap that a lot of us always tend to fall into, especially at the start of our journeys, is the fund returns versus investor returns trap. Now, how are the two of them even different? Why does it matter that they are different? That's exactly what Ravi and Lisa are going to be covering in today's episode. So sit back, relax, and take copious notes, because they're going to help you out in your investment journey. Over to you, Ravi.
Thanks, Ahalya. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Smart Investing. Today, we are talking about something that many investors miss noticing. This is the difference between fund returns and investor returns. It may sound the same, but it's really not. The number you see on a mutual fund's fact sheet and the return you actually experience in your portfolio can be very different. So why does that happen? Is it the market timing or it's us? Joining me today is Lisa, who's going to help us understand why our returns often don't match what's advertised and what we can do to fix that. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Ravi. It's good to be back, and you've picked such an important topic for today.
So let's start, Lisa, with this common trap. Most of us pick a fund based on the recent past return. So why is that risky?
Okay, so Ravi, I feel like the starting point itself is misleading, and from then on, things get more complicated. While most mutual fund investors will look at past returns before investing, it is important to understand that past returns are not a mirror for the future. Unlike fixed return investments, say in bonds or deposits, in case of market-linked investments like mutual funds, returns follow a trajectory which can change in the short to medium term, right? So market prices of listed stocks, for example, and bonds, which are what market-linked portfolios are made of, tend to change on a daily basis. And that happens in reaction to, say, news and demand-supply dynamics. This is called volatility. And volatility defines the near-term price trend. Sometimes these kind of changes can be confusing for the investor who has looked at a given past return and is expecting the same thing in a defined time period. And so investing in mutual funds should not be done looking at past returns of specific funds. Rather, you may be more accurate considering the historical performance of an entire category of funds, regardless of the asset class. Moreover, past returns should always be measured in terms of rolling returns, which will show you the performance on a continuous basis across long-term time periods rather than absolute kind of point-to-point returns. The latter shows you the performance on a particular day, and that can be, as we said, misleading in volatile times.
Yes, you're right, Lisa. So let's say I've done my research and picked a good fund with a strong history, will I still end up with lower returns than what the fact sheet or website is displaying? And what could be the reason behind it?
Okay, firstly, let's talk about expenses, because that gets left out sometimes. There is a component of expenses which are embedded in the price you pay or the NAV of the mutual fund scheme. Now, this is very small, up to 2-2.5% a year in equity funds and lower in case of debt funds. However, the published NAV also includes this. And while some people may think that this is what explains the difference in their personal return and the published return, it's not the case, because both personal and published returns do account for the expense. Mostly the way we compare returns is incomplete. We look at the overall absolute return of our portfolio and the mutual fund schemes within that, which means we see the gain and then divided by the initial investment and use that percentage number as the return. However, when you compare that to a published return of the same scheme, it will look different. The published return is an annualized number or expressed in terms of annual return which you are not doing with the portfolio absolute return you are looking at. Secondly, it matters what time period you consider while comparing returns. It needs to be exactly the same. So you cannot compare the annualized return of your investment started on the 15th of December, say 2024, with the annualized 1 year return of the scheme today, because that will show the return from this date in September last year. Hence, matching the type of return and the time period of return is important. Else the numbers will not align.
Right, Lisa. So I think investors have to spend a little bit more time understanding the XIIR, CAGR and absolute returns, these concepts. So now what we are seeing is a lot of investors are investing through the SIP route, which is, very convenient for investors. Will they also face the same mismatch problem?
Yeah, well, they will if they don't compare it correctly. So if you compare your SIP returns with absolute returns of a scheme, they will usually look lower. This is true even if you compare on the same starting date, right? This happens because the absolute return is calculated from the NAV on that date till the NAV, say, today. A long time period will most likely show a considerable gain, at least for Indian equities, that holds true. The SIP, on the other hand, is a regular investment done in small installments throughout a defined period. If the market is in an uptrend in that period, each SIP installment would have been purchased probably at a higher NAV than the first purchase, and returns to that extent will be lower, right? When compared with lump sum published returns, despite the starting date being the same. Now, if there is a correction in the market and you continue to invest in the same SIP, let's say the correction continues for a few months or a year or more, then your SIP returns will in fact start to look relatively better, as you would have bought units at lower NAVs than the starting NAV.
Yes, I think it's a lot to do with the timing and when you start your investment. So I believe this gap is mostly dependent on us. It's more of a behavioral gap, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of timing is also a big part of it. So say you invested in January 2003, right? And exited in January 2008. It's like perfect timing. You would have made nearly 6 times your money. Now, this is where behavior comes in, right? Your friend invested in January 2004 and exited, looking at your returns, and exited in January 2009. It is also a 5-year period like yours, but she would have made only 50% in those 5 years. Same market, same product category, totally different outcomes because of where the market cycle was when they exited. So one has to pay attention to your behavior in the sense, should you remain invested or not? You have to think in decades, not in years. One full business cycle is, say, 7 to 8 years, and that is just the minimum required for your investment. 10 years or more is ideal for equities. And if you're prone to panic selling, then of course, a good investor can act as your emotional shock absorber and help you remain invested.
Yeah, Lisa, that's true. And I think there's some data to support what we are talking about. I came across a Morningstar study, which was done in 2022. So this research showed that over a 3-year period in the FlexiCap category, investors earn 3% less every year than what the fund has generated. And in sectoral and thematic funds, the difference was even huge. For instance, in technology funds, investors earn 24% less than what the fund earned. So that's a huge gap. And this shows that investors are, chasing performance, and many of them are entering when the fund has already generated good returns. Which brings me to this next question. Lisa, many mutual fund houses, what they publish on their website. So how are these returns calculated, and does that impact the comparison?
Yes, it is important to understand how returns are calculated for different purposes. In case of mutual fund schemes, the return is calculated based on how the price of the scheme or the NAV changes over time. This is then expressed as an annual return, making it comparable with other scheme returns and even other financial securities returns, right? So you're bringing it to a uniform standard, which is annual return. Technically, the return is called compounded annualized growth rate, or as you mentioned, CAGR. You take the price or the NAV of a scheme on a particular past date divided by the current NAV and adjust the return as an annual return. Since mutual fund scheme returns are not a linear trend, right? It's not like a fixed deposit kind of rate. Annualized return or CAGR is the best way to smoothen it out and depict what the fund has historically delivered over the last few years. But the return itself is expressed as a per annum or annual return. So let me explain this a little bit. When we say that your fund X has delivered 10% annualized return over the last 6 years, it does not mean that the total return of the fund can be broken into 10% return each year for the last 6 years. It may not be how the fund performed each of those 6 years, but cumulatively, that's the return. Some years the return would have been more than 10%, and in other years it could have been below 10% as well. When you do that for all mutual fund schemes and other financial securities, you can now easily compare performance regardless of the time period you are looking at. That sort of serves the purpose from an investment product perspective, and hence the published returns are in the form of annualized return or CAGR.
Okay, so how is this method of return calculation useful for investors, and should they be calculating their portfolio return similarly?
So as we spoke, the annualized return or CAGR method is meaningful in comparison across schemes and even across different assets. And that does help investors kind of filter through what they want to invest in. It helps to also standardize return across products. So you're looking at one format and not different formats. But when it comes to your portfolio, it is slightly different. Unlike the fund where return is calculated based on NAVs of just, you know, 2 points, as we spoke about, 1 point in the past and then today, or the start date and the end date, your portfolio has cash flow activity which needs to be captured, right? So you invest at different points in time. You may be investing monthly through SIPs, and you may be withdrawing regularly or in, you know, some defined intervals. You may get cash lump sums which get added through the year, or there are investment top-ups and so on. So every product in your portfolio may have a different type of return, like, you know, a fixed return or a market return and so on. Typically, portfolio or scheme returns within a portfolio are calculated taking into account interim cash flows as well, like your SIPs or any outflows or any kind of lump sums that you're putting in at different points in time. This creates a need to calculate using either an IRR, or what we call an internal rate of return method, or an XIRR method, which takes into account different inflows and outflows. These are better at including these kind of inflows and outflows rather than looking at point-to-point returns, as is the case when you are looking at the published investment return. So these details are important, because if you don't know the differences in calculating return, then you may end up calculating return incorrectly, and the comparison will be inaccurate and not meaningful to you.
Yes, so I think when we are comparing funds, it's important to look at the CAGR return while we are calculating our own portfolio returns. I think XIR is the right method, I think. So great, Lisa, I think we have covered a lot of ground today. And so what we can understand from today's discussion is that the fund return could be higher than your own portfolio return because of the timing of your investments. And you may exit a pause which disturbs the sequence of return, and thus investors invariably end up earning less return than what the fund generates. So thus it is important to keep invested through the ups and downs to earn closer to what the fund generates. So here are some of my key takeaways for our listeners. The first one is that past returns don't guarantee future returns. Look at long-term rolling returns and not just the last year's winner. Match your math and your time frame of investment when comparing your returns to the published returns. The third learning is that SIPs and lump sums behave differently. SIPs help you in accumulating more units when markets correct, and lump sums may give you better returns in bull runs. The fourth learning is that your behavior is a big driver. Staying invested through ups and downs is non-negotiable. The fifth learning is think in decades, 10-year plus smooths out the volatility. The sixth learning is that calculate your returns correctly. Use CAGR returns for product comparison and XIRR for your own portfolio. And last but not the least, the discipline is very hard. So get an advisor to help you keep on track. So if you follow these principles, your returns may get much closer to what the fund, you know, generates. So thank you, Lisa, once again for sharing your valuable insights on this topic. And we'll see you once again very soon.
Thanks, Ravi. It's good talking to you always.
Who would have thought? So much to unpack in that conversation. You know, just the difference between those two concepts brings up so much about investor strategy and how you should be behaving as an investor, which, you know, I think we should do an episode on that very soon, because investor behavior is endlessly fascinating and deserves to be unpacked as well. But until next time, hope this episode kept you informed. And as always, happy investing.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
You are listening to the Smart Investing Podcast, brought to you by Money and Me, an investor education and awareness initiative by PGIM India Mutual Fund.